For anyone visiting and living in central Tokyo, come visit the Nakameguro Tap Room from Baird Brewery. Opened in 2008, Nakameguro Tap Room is the first Tokyo area tap room from Baird Brewery. Their kitchen specializes in New Haven style appeats, which I have told you is the best style of Neapolitan pizza. New Haven style places a high emphasis on high temperature baking, fresh seasonal toppings, and a crispy light crust. Combined with all the classic Japan-based Baird beers on tap, enjoy all vintage beer hall feels at Nakameguro Tap Room. There's even a sofa area and a large TV screen great for sporting events. Only a 2-minute walk from Nakameguro Station, the tap room is open daily until 10 p.m. For more information, visit bairdbeer.com.
I started off of that book, and I started using patterns from that book.
Okay.
But then I found, like, well, what if I actually took a real flower, and I, because the book was very basic space. I think it was for beginners, so very basic shapes. And so I took last year I took a real sakura flower, and I stamped it, and then I put the, and then I cut the stamped flower out, and then I turned that into a pattern, and that's what this is. It's based off real flower, and then I just filled in the colors by myself. So
hey there, welcome to Made in Japan, Conversations with Meljo Catalan. This is my podcast about Japan, but it's not just your run-of-the-mill, cool Japan podcast. I want to explore a side of Japan besides sushi and sumo, anime, and video games. I'm here to extrapolate and meditate with the local people that your travel guide probably doesn't touch on. People that are hungry for making it, and people that have made it. This podcast is my talks with them.
What up, everyone? Welcome to the Made in Japan podcast. My name is Meljo Catalan. If you are new here, welcome. Welcome to our conversations. I am here with a new episode with a guest who is an up-and-coming entrepreneur. And how appropriate that I have this episode on, I would say, the opening of spring 2022. This up-and-coming entrepreneur, she goes by the name Miko Hayashi, or as I know her, it's Mimi. And she started a embroidery business. She is a self-taught embroidery artist, and she does a lot of really cool things with brooches and basically lots of different accessories and jewelry that she does with embroidery. And so it's perfect timing because I wanted to put out an episode for her because she is having her first ever exhibition gallery in Harajuku this month. So I figured, well, for those who are very interested, I'm sure they will probably want to get to know and see her work, and hopefully they would like to purchase some of her embroidery pieces, and I think she deserves it because she's just really cool. So we're going to be talking with Mimi and how she was grew up, and she will explain to her Mimi Hana Threads business to you all. And so without further ado, this is Mimi, a self-taught embroidery artist. And here we go. It's been real, Mimi. It's been a while, you know?
Yeah. Bit, yeah.
Are you doing okay?
Yeah, I haven't been on for a bit. Yeah, just buried under the work I made for myself this week.
Well, that's good though. Keeping busy is really good though, for sure, you know?
Yeah. But I'm been working on the gallery for the past year now or more, and finally coming to an end. Yeah. So getting there.
Nice. I mean, that's where what we're doing. That's why we're here, right? We're gonna talk about you and But well, first off, Mimi, I need to know, how should I call you? Just, is it Mimi or Miko or?
So everybody calls me Miko, but for the sake of my business, I made it Mimi because I guess it was more of a, what do you call it? Just an alternate name for the business
name.
Sake.
Your stage name.
So yeah, I like an artist name. So
there you go.
I thought, well, I don't really want to be Miko because I already have some things under that name. So let's do something a little different. So I decided that maybe Mimi is kind of cute. So I just go by
Mimi's great. I mean, I've always known you as Mimi, you know, so this is going to be a smooth episode because this is totally off the cuff because I did not plan to have an extra episode this month. And I was like, you know what? She's my homegirl. She's got to get promoted.
Thank you for an extra episode.
No, it's my pleasure. What's good, homegirl? How are you doing?
Well, let's see. Today was tax day for Japan. And for the very first time this year, I got the envelope from the tax office and saying that taxes for my business, and I've never done it before. And I was just like, well, actually, here's the thing. I wasn't accepting orders last year, so I didn't make any profit.
What? You're pulling back the curtain too early. You can't say that.
Because I was looking for the gallery, and I had to put all my energy, all my focus into that. Like, if I have orders coming in while I'm trying to do this at the same time, nothing is going to get done. So I had to say, sorry, guys. Close. So I go to the tax office, like, well, here's the thing. It's actually negative because I spent
money. It's a trick, right? I think everyone I know who's a freelance or you know, has their own business, this is the time of the year where you're just kind of like super uber stressed out, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. So wait, that was my whole day.
Well, it sounds like a not so cool day, but...
But I'll tell you, I'd rather do taxes in Japan than the States.
Yes.
It's much easier.
Can we talk about that? Like how it's so much more smoother in Japan, in my opinion.
So first of all, when you talk with the workers who are helping you, none of them are disgruntled. And that makes it nice. Nobody's rolling their eyes saying next.
Exactly.
And the second thing is that if you do your taxes, if you go to Shibuya to do your taxes or like some big office like that, it's like if there were ever a convention for taxes instead of cosplay, then that would be it. Like, that's what it is. That's awesome. Basically what it is. Awesome. And instead of your little booth where you do your little, meet people and things, you're just doing your taxes at the little areas, you know, designated areas.
And sometimes
and they shuffle you around.
Sometimes your neighbor in the other booth comes and helps you out.
Exactly. Right. So then they actually had English support there too. Yeah. But even though the guy was really helpful and he's speaking English and there's nothing wrong with his English, but man, he's got the mask, he's got the face guard, and on top of that, there's like the vinyl covering. So he's talking at like this, and all around is this ambient noise. But it just comes out, whoa, 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 but what? What did you? What? What? Sorry, can you say that again? And he was like, and then he said, oh, whoa, 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 like, hi, okay. Like,
it's like, yes, I understand Charlie Brown peanut stuff. Yes, I can understand this. I'll move on.
I could, but yeah.
Oh, man.
It's just your sound was so filtered through all of like three layers. I just couldn't get anything.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, myself have never experienced this, but like, you know, I work for a company, so they take care of my taxes, but like, it's like, I've heard so many horror stories at the tax office, and also like amazing, like, you know, guardian angel type of stories where the public worker would come in and just like take care of, you know, your taxes. So like, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But seriously, Mimi, what's been good? It's been a while though, for real.
What's good? I don't know. Every day, it's like a daily grind. That's what it is.
It is. It's a daily. We're still so, going through this, you know?
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, the daily grind is get daughter ready in the morning, take her to daycare, then sit down and do own work. Then it's time to go get lunch, and my husband's working at home. So we go and then go pick her up at 4 and then put her to bed and do some more work. And that's just like, that's my daily life. And so I don't know, highlights. Okay. This past weekend, it's my husband's birthday was yesterday. So the past weekend we went to see the Gundam, in Yokohama.
The movie one, right? Yeah.
Before it closes down at the end of the month. Yeah. And that's the one thing he's always wanted to do. So okay. He decided we're there. So that was pretty cool. And actually, it was good for my daughter because, first, she likes Gundam only because he likes Gundam. But also, they had this robot there that takes models of Gundams, and they're all laid out like this. And then it just picks it up and then assembles it and puts it together. And it makes one. Yeah, it takes like maybe 2 minutes for it to make one Gundam mini model and then put up that. And that's all it does. It's like, and my daughter, that was her favorite. Awesome. Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't sound boring at all. That sounds like mad fun.
Yeah, so every now and then there's the nice little weekend excursions, and those are nice. And other than that, then yeah, it's more like, you know, right. Tunnel vision.
Right. Well, before we get into like why we're here talking, you know, I want to first talk about you made the wrong decision to marry a Filipino man.
No.
And when you shared that story on Instagram, I was like, yeah, that's strike 1, 2, and 3 because I'm that guy too, you know. We're just Filipino men. We're just stupid romantic, and like we are awful, you know. We are.
The thing is, my husband's Filipino, but he's half Filipino. His mom is the Filipino.
Doesn't matter. And he's got the blood.
Dad is Hungarian, but it still made it in there. It's still
he's
in
got
there.
The blood.
It's in there. Yeah. So I was just, you know what, he might not identify as Filipino, but I see it. Like, I see the part.
It's denial. Like, every Filipino guy I know is, like, romantic Romeo times, like, 100, you know? So, yes. But I'm sure he's a great guy, even though I don't even know him.
That's right. Yeah, so... So he still messages me things like, "Oh my God, we're married," and then he'll look at me, we're like, and then he'll point at my ring. And he's like, "Nice ring, who gave it to you?"
Does your mother-in-law call you and be like, "Are you still coming for Christmas?" Like, does she do that?
Well, actually, she's not your typical Filipina mom. Oh, so okay. She's very calm. She's also very careful, and she's let's see, she always, the way that she looks out for me is that she'll find an article about I don't know, things you can do with your kid, and then she'll email it to me, and she's like, "Here, if you like it, you can do this, but if you don't worry about it."
It's basically saying you should do it then.
yeah doesn't really mind whether I do it or not. And then she'll ask me, "Miko, did you see my emails? Like, what do you think about my emails?" Like, "Oh, Binky, I really like your emails." And her name's Binky. Yeah. And then, "Binky, I like your emails. But you know, the thing is that I honestly just, we don't have the time to do all of those projects. But I mean, it looks fun. but I enjoy it. I can't. Realistically, I can't do it." It's like, "Oh, okay. Well, don't worry about it." But she's cool. She's a good mother-in-law.
Yeah.
So.
No. Like, I'm just, in jest, I'm just talking about, you know, I think Filipino families are amazing to be part of. It could be very overbearing. I think you know that.
When we went to Manila, then that was the full Filipino experience. Yeah. So yeah.
Do you like the food? Do you like the food?
Ooh, the food is delicious. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. So good. I don't know it that well, but I do. What I did have there was really amazing.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I said before, this is like a kind of like a, you know, off the cuff like episode. But I think what you're doing is super cool, and your hobby's cool. But before we go into that though, I want to know more about you. And okay. I looked into your blog, and you talked about how, I mean you're Japanese American, right?
Yeah, I'm fourth generation Japanese.
Yeah.
My great-grandparents came to Tacoma area around 1917 or so.
Okay.
And so quite early on. And they were part of the Nihonmachi, Japan, where before World War II, all up and down the West Coast were all of these really flourishing Japan towns. And they were self-managed by Japanese immigrants, or Issei and Nisei generation, first and second generation. And their focus was, I know they had barbershops, they had groceries, they had outside of the Nihonmachi, they had farmers who were, for example, I saw one about Green Lake in Seattle. And they had these greenhouses, which they were really, really good at it. And they were very prosperous. And they had all sorts of bunka villages or cultural villages where they or centers where they would do the Japanese things like judo or our calligraphy groups and everything. And that was before Pearl Harbor attack.
Yeah.
And so my grandma and grandpa, my dad's mother and father were part of that in Tacoma. And my grandpa or great grandpa and his both of their families on my dad's mom and dad's side, their parents were part of I don't know about my grandma's parents, but I know my grandpa's parents had a grocery store and it was called Hayashi Grocery or something like that. And he was doing really well. I mean, he even had like a permanent spot up until internment came. And when the internment came, all of the Nihonmachis overnight were gone. Just disappeared.
Right.
And so because of that, and my grandpa experienced that, my grandma experienced that, and they were sent to Idaho. When they came back, they returned to nothing. It was all taken away. And they knew that they were put away because they were Japanese American. Then that was the why. There was no other reason, because they'd grown up and lived as Americans, although with Japanese parents. But because of those experiences, they decided that they would raise their children as American as possible.
Okay.
And that was my dad and his siblings' experience growing up. So they were all given American names. I think they did try to learn Japanese a little bit when they were growing up.
Right.
Not, but I think just for a few years. And then my dad had told me that when he was growing up, he didn't want to be Japanese. He wanted to not. So that's where that came from. Me, on the other hand, past all of that, I was totally opposite.
Yeah.
I saw what the Japanese culture had to offer.
Yeah.
And I remember sometime in the first grade, it clicked that I was also part of that somehow. But I didn't know anything about it because it wasn't in our house. My dad didn't have that part of it, him growing up. Mm-hmm. And so it would later, I had to go out and find it by myself. And so I tried to do, when I was in middle school, I think, middle school a little bit, go to Japanese lessons on Saturdays, go to Japanese school. And I picked up a little bit, not a lot. And then I decided, well, someday I have to live in Japan and just kind of really figure this out. So, you know, in high school, I'm still trying to figure it out. I went to, through the kawaii phase.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. And also I went to, when I went to college, my major was Japanese language, and that's how I got better at it. And they sent me to study abroad for a total of 3 semesters. And then I figured, okay, well, it was really fun. So when I graduate, I definitely have to live and work in Japan, and I don't know what I'm doing yet, but I got to do it. Yeah. But what happened is that because of my interest in Japan, and my dad saw it, and he actually went to visit Japan with me when I was 17, he saw that, oh, you know, actually it is kind of cool to be part of this. And so he started to get more interested in Japanese culture because of that.
That's amazing.
And yeah. And then he also inherited a few ukiyo-e prints from a woman.
Yeah.
And so he started collecting those as well. So yeah, but
apologies for misconstruing, because it's like a better story. Like, you kind of support your dad to go back into his roots.
Yeah. And I'm the middle child.
Okay.
I have 2 sisters. So they're not as into it as I am. So I feel like I have to be, in a way, the ambassador for the family. Or if at least if I don't bring it back to everybody in the family, at least I have it for my daughter growing up. So that she's part of that too. And so, I think that's a good reason. One of the reasons why I'd like to stay in Japan a bit longer. Yeah.
There's something, that drive of a middle child, because I'm the fourth of five children in my family. Mm-hmm. And there's something with us, like, as middle children, to have some special drive. The reason why I mentioned this was, like, it kind of struck me because I was born in the Philippines.
Okay.
And I didn't meet my parents until I was 5-6 years old, actually.
Oh, yeah. So,
because my parents were basically working around the world. They were literally, like, working around the world.
Common.
Yeah. Well. My mother was an English teacher, and my father was an engineer working for the British government in Nigeria. And, they basically had this idea that they don't want their kids to live in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And they want a better education for their kids, right? Like, so... So when I first met them, I was like 5 years old, and I moved to Connecticut. And then, like, it was more like they purposely did not want to live in the West Coast because they didn't want to. I'm not sure if that's exactly the main reason, but, like, they purposely wanted us to be more Americanized and having an American, quote unquote, American education. Mm-hmm. And so they figured New England was the best potential for our kids.
Interesting perspective, yeah.
It is, right? And I was like, holy, like this is just, you know, in retrospective right now, you know. So, like, so when I read your blog, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if, like, that's the same thinking, you know, your parents' thinking was the same as my parents' thinking at that time.
I see.
So
they did. As an American on purpose, but it was just more, you know, we were already Americans.
There was a lot of, like, this calls for a lot of Asian Americans. There's a lot of, like, identity crisis back in the early, you know, the 80s and the 90s. So, like, it was something that we struggled with. But it was something that I questioned a lot. Like, why am I not, like, why are we not in participating in Filipino communities so much? So we were, like, blending in, like, middle-class suburbia, getting a good education. You know what I mean?
So for my upbringing, we moved around a lot because actually my dad is a reverend. So, you know, he'll be called to or while I was growing up, he was called to work at several different churches. So I actually born in near Spokane in Washington at first.
Oh, okay.
So, but that's because that's where he was working. And then after that, he moved to Ogden, Utah, and because he was called to work there.
Okay.
So, and I mean, but the thing is that because of the locations where he was called to work up until I was 12, the diversity was not very huge. I mean, I don't remember Spokane because we moved when I was three, so I barely remember. I remember my time in Utah, but then after that, he was called to work in the Bay Area, California, through Menlo Park. That's where I graduated from high school, and then I went to college to choose where I wanted to go. But I ended up going to somewhere in Oregon, McMinnville, Oregon, for Linfield College. And that was also more white people.
I don't
know. I mean, just the diversity in my upbringing was very limited. So it was hard for me to find the connection to being Japanese because it wasn't home and it wasn't out where I was living. And it's really hard to find. So that's why I think that's why I felt like I had to get out.
Got it. Got it. But I mean, you've been in, so when you finally came to Japan to actually like start working, you've been really like trying to do a lot of things. I mean, I noticed you were trying to do a tour guide thing going on. You know, photography, right?
Yeah, I always wanted to have my own business somehow, and it was, but you know, first I had to get my foot in the door, so I did teaching for a bit, and then decided that I mean, teaching was also very stressful, but also it's a lot. So
it's a grind.
I started my photography and touring business in 2016. And I did that for almost a year. But then what stopped me that I got pregnant. And I worked up until I was maybe eight months pregnant or so. So, but I was still walking around like,
do your thing.
I didn't have a lot of. It was not, I was good. So, I mean, but the very last tour I did was in October, and then she came in later, mid-November. So, but I mean, I kind of, you know, someday I would like to go back into that, but you know, there's COVID, there's a little girl, and she can't, she needs me in the evenings, and you know, tour guides need to, tours want to be done in the evenings too, and yeah, I can't do everything. So that's how the embroidery started, is because I could do it at home and it's still mine. And so that's what I wanted. It's just, I wanted something mine. I wanted something where I can express myself and be artistic. And so.
How did that start, the embroidery? Where was that spark?
I guess, I mean, so my mom was always somebody who's creative as well. She's the artist. And so she does painting, and she also does sewing. I don't think she really does so much of embroidery, but I guess I found embroidery to be attractive. Not sure what it was, but there was something about that I wanted to try it. But I also saw that a lot of people, when they do embroidery, the hoop embroidery or doing it on clothes, really, you know, that's a lot of people like to do that. And I don't, I like that. It's nice. It has its place, but I wanted to do something a bit different. So then I saw a book that was teaching how to do the 3D embroidery like this.
I'm seeing that. It looks awesome.
Yeah. And so, but the, I started on off of that book, and I started using patterns from that book.
Okay.
But then I found like, well, what if I actually took a real flower. And I, because the book was very basic space. I think it was for beginners. So very basic shapes. And so I took a real, last year, I took a real sakura flower and I stamped it. And then I put the, and then I cut the stamped flower out. And then I turned that into a pattern. And that's what this is. It's based off real flower. And then I just filled in the colors by myself. So actually, if I could share the screen, it might be better.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can.
Too bad this is a podcast and not a YouTube video. Yeah. but it looks so awesome. I'll do a screen capture for this.
Okay. Yeah. So this is the preview for what the gallery is going to look like. But
nice.
Let's zoom in. Okay. So this is what I'm wearing right now is this.
Nice.
There. Yeah. So that's actually based off of the real flower, like I was saying.
Nice.
So before, and then this is the kanzashi that I have here as well.
Awesome.
This is,
here we go.
There's more. And I was also trying to get more into some finer jewels. Mm-hmm. I added real pearl to the end. Well, and the designs are my designs. I'm done using the book for design patterns. So this is a brooch, which I don't really wear brooches, but I think some people wear brooches, but
I noticed on your website the brooches, and I was like, it does suit a lot of a specific type of person, like
right.
Your style. But I'm very, I didn't know that you actually took a cherry blossom flower petal and
yeah. So this is the book. So this flower I made a couple years ago. So this is what the book's pattern is.
Okay.
And I did a few of those for the very beginning, but I decided, you know, they don't really look like what I think a sakura should look like.
Yeah.
Right. So I thought, well, maybe I should just take a real sakura and do it. And I feel like it looks a lot better.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's so awesome. I'll stop sharing if, unless you want to.
Well, the one that really intrigued me was the Venus flytrap earring.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, damn, that's hardcore metal.
when I first started. So I don't know if I have, you know, I can just go to my website, start broadcast.
Yeah.
Do you still see it?
Yeah, I see your screen. Yep.
And this one I made from the very beginning. I don't know. I wanted to do something different, and that's what I like. I like doing things that most people are not doing. So this is the ear cuff, and I'll go to the shop so I can actually see it in detail. Uh-huh. Let's see, carnivorous plants, and I think I intend to make more. Yeah, quick view.
I am all about this. I mean,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, you know, it really, really stood out. For sure.
Yeah, I wanted to do something different. So I haven't really worn it. I probably should wear it more often. But anyway, not many people wanted it. That's the thing. So
At a glance, it looks like a mini caterpillar, like around your ear.
I see.
But then
that's how.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks awesome though.
Yeah. So I looked up what the flower looks like for the plant too, so I could get it correct.
Yeah.
So what I did is that I looked at the flower on the screen, and then what I used is I traced the flower on the screen, and that became the pattern for the flower.
Okay.
Same was Venus flytrap too. So
it just stands out. I'm like, whoa, that's pretty rad. Like, I've never seen that before.
Yeah. Yeah,
you need to do
but
more.
No one wanted. Okay, I'll stick to normal.
But like, all right, so let's move on. I mean, now we are going to your very first exhibition in.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. So.
Okay. So the exhibition idea started last year, or maybe 2020, it was late 2020, And I was randomly contacted by a gallery in Osaka. And they saw that I made an embroidery badger for a badger.
Okay.
Like an animal. Okay. Yeah. It's a animal that lives in England.
Okay,
the only is because a customer wanted Hufflepuff themed earrings, and I said, okay, but I can't call it that. I'm just gonna make you a badger face with yellow on it. And she said, fine. So I did that. And so that when I made it, and I usually don't make this kind of stuff, but they said, okay, well, we really love your embroidery, so we want to have you participate in our animal themed exhibition.
Okay.
And so I made that, and then I also made one more with a fox and on kimono fabric for a brooch. And that was a good experience for me, because then I learned a different technique of embroidery called needle painting, where you use similar colored threads as a gradient to make it look like it's a painting. Yeah. So that's how I made the fox.
Okay.
And so I sent my stuff over and they exhibited it, but no one bought anything. So and then they said, well, now we really like your work, so we want you to have your own very own exhibition of your own thing in Osaka. But then I looked at terms, and they first of all, the space that they were allowing wasn't very big, and then the other thing was that they wanted me to pay some sort of flat fee for the room, and then they said they were going to take commission on top of that. And then I was thinking, okay, maybe I'll do this, but do you guys have a contract ready for in case, you know, because I don't live in Tokyo. I don't live in Osaka. I live in Tokyo. So I can't, you know, go there all the time.
Yeah.
And so they said, actually, we don't have a contract. Like, what do you mean? So I just send you stuff. Like, what if somebody decides to take it or it gets damaged, you know, you have protection? So I said, okay, you know what? You know, if you ever have a contract ready, just let me know. And then I didn't get an answer back. So I said, okay, so then I got to look into other options. So that's how the gallery idea started. And so somebody recommended Design Festa Gallery in Harajuku, which I feel they have a really great platform, because it's rent the room by the day, and you can rent for as long as you like.
Right.
And then you only pay for the space, and you don't have to pay commission on top of that, because they're making the money off of the room rental instead.
Right.
And so that's how I did that. And so I said, okay, I'm just going to do this my way. So I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a well-established gallery, actually.
It is. You know? Yeah. And they're reputable around since 96, I think, is on their website. It's really good, and it's also a really good location in Harajuku. So, yeah.
Miko, I remember, when I came to Japan, I came in 2006, and I remember when the Design Festa was just like a budding art gallery, and next to it was like, you know, Sakura House? The show house? Yeah. There was a Sakura House next to it that my friends lived in, and there would be parties every night. Yeah. Every night. at that place. And there would be people like filtering, like, you know, dripping in from the Design Festa Gallery, coming into the Sakura House. So it's a prime location for especially artists, people who are very creative, that are trying to, exhibit their stuff, you know, whatever it is. But very well established, Design Festa.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really happy with that. And I'm going to see how it goes. The only thing that I was really sad about was the rise of Omicron, because for that, you know, in November, they were saying, we're going to allow people in maybe from February. And then Omicron came and you're like, no.
I was just talking about this today with a client. Like, we had like the quasi state of emergency, and now we have like in Japan, like, which is like a lower level state of emergency. I'm just like, what are we doing here? Like
different tiers of
quasi
pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like, yeah, it's... you know, and then we were, and before we were on air, we were just talking about like how we got our booster shots too. Like, it's just like,
So I was down the day I got it was okay.
Yeah.
But then the day after I got it, I was sleeping almost the whole day. Okay. But yeah, it didn't feel like I had the flu though. So that was good. But there was definitely some heavy head feeling and slight nausea. But
you recovered though, right? Yeah.
The next day after that, I was fine. So yeah. And actually, I didn't have any sore. I mean, I had some soreness, but I could still move my arm. So oh, really?
Okay. Okay. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love feeling like a superhero after recovery. I feel
that's
like.
True. So now, like, I don't really need this mask. It's just for appearances, right? That's how I felt.
Oh man! But like, no. Seriously, let's be real here, Miko. Like, I think your embroideries are really beautiful, and I think what you're doing as a craft, and you're self-taught. That's really cool. We gotta plug your exhibition. So
okay, so I gotta get this correct. So from March 22nd to the 25th. Sorry, it will be a Design Festa Gallery in the Art Corner on the West Wing.
Okay.
So if you know where Ho Ho Cam is, the burger place,
I do.
It's that side.
Okay.
Okay. So and then. From the weekend, which is the 26th to the 28th, it will move to its own room at 2C.
Oh, the second floor. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And so then the hours are from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Okay.
And
we're going to see you there if we go over, if we stay by.
Yeah. You'll see me there. Unless I'm on my lunch break, but or if it's at a certain hour later and nobody's coming, then I'll go home. But not only will I be exhibiting my embroidery, you can also buy it, but I'll take orders while I'm there. Awesome. And I also have a bunch of fabric masks that I made. So nice. You should come in for those. And I also have fabric button jewelry for, just as really cute little dainty accessories that are not so big like these. So if you like smaller things, then yeah. So.
And I actually think if you guys, any listeners interested, you should go and just talk to Miko and me. She's just a fabulous lady to talk to. So. That's all.
Thank
I gotta
you.
Say.
Talk to you too.
I'm gonna try to stop by. I'm not sure when. Either way, I'll try to stop by, Mimi.
Okay.
Awesome. But yeah, good. You know, seriously, well done with your embroidery, and it really is awesome to see.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Anyways, let's peace out then.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Have a good evening.
If you're interested and you want to check out some of Mimi's works, come visit her at the Design Festa Gallery exhibition. She will be there this month from March 22nd to March 28th. To learn more about it, the gallery, and to see any of her works online, check out her website, mimihanathreads.com. You are listening to Made in Japan podcast, Conversations with Meljo Katalan. For questions, comments, and concerns, please feel free to email me at japanmademepodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to hit me up. I'm always on Instagram or on Facebook. Just hit me up at Made in Japan Podcast. You can find me wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, feel free to like or leave a comment and subscribe on Apple, iTunes, or even Spotify. And if you really like what you're hearing with my podcast and what I'm doing, feel free to visit me on my Ko-fi page. That's ko-fi.com/madeinjapanpodcast. You can donate whatever you'd like, buy me a drink for me and my guests. It's really the main thing that helps support this podcast of mine. And yeah, thank you for listening, and I will be back with another episode. Until then, peace out.